This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Rolling right along here on a Monday morning. It is Taz and the Moose with you. Coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, and make sure to go out there and mortgage confidently. Can't play a talking number to call 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227.
Attention hotline fans.
We've got Mikey B, Pete the Body across the way as we take you 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 to 6 Pacific, Monday through Friday here on CBS Sports Radio. Sirius 206, XM 206, Sirius XM app, channel 206. World Cup well underway over in Russia. And let's get the thoughts of the very talented Grant Wall. He's got a new book out. We'll get there momentarily. Sports Illustrated, Fox Sports, doing coverage over there in Russia. Hey, Grant, Mark Malusis, Andrew Bogish with you here on this Monday morning. Thanks for a couple minutes.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
You got it, Grant. Let's start here. The American soccer fan, right, that loves USA soccer. How do you think, what would your advice be for them to approach this World Cup, Grant?
Try to enjoy it. You know, it's hard, and there's no sugarcoating that the U.S. isn't here. They didn't deserve to be here. They didn't qualify. And that's a horrible feeling if you're a U.S. soccer fan and your team had qualified for every men's World Cup going back to 1990. I think today it could be even harder watching Panama, which beat the U.S. in the qualifying tournament, play in the World Cup. But you got to deal with it and then watch the games. There's still great stories going on. And if you're a soccer fan, you can't help but enjoy what's going on here just as a neutral, or pick a team or do whatever you want to do to enjoy the World Cup. But there have been some fantastic games so far in the first few days. And I'm enjoying being over here, even though I'd love to see the U.S. here.
And, Grant, obviously one of those great games so far, going back, I guess it was Friday afternoon, Spain and Portugal. It's impossible for me and Mark to understand just how good that game was. But group stage, World Cup, I mean, is that maybe one of the best you've ever seen?
Easily one of the best group stage games I've ever seen at a World Cup. The game had a little bit of everything. Cristiano Ronaldo had a hat trick, but Spain came from behind twice in this game. Diego Costa had two goals for Spain, which... actually, even though they're probably disappointed with that end result, played pretty well at times. And I picked Spain to win this tournament beforehand. And even though they changed their coach just 2 days before their first game, I think they can still win it. They've still got great players. But Ronaldo has such a sense of theater to have the late free kick after Portugal had really done nothing in the second half, and to just bury it was just such a cool moment. My favorite moment of this World Cup, along with Mexico beating Germany yesterday.
Grant, before we leave Ronaldo, I know this kind of came up again as everyone was watching him be ridiculous on Friday, and this is another novice soccer question for me, but as I've, you know, learned to like the game and follow the game, it's kind of surprised me, just like maybe from like a numbers standpoint, that there hasn't been an American Ronaldo, just a guy that is just a pure athlete, perfect for the game, that is a star that this soccer country can rally around, a guy that makes the utmost difference. Maybe Pulisic is that guy moving forward. But again, just from like the law of averages, should I be surprised that we haven't even stumbled upon a generational player like this yet?
You know, it's a great question, because we have yet to see, on the men's side at least,
right,
a true U.S. soccer superstar. Christian Pulisic has the possibilities of getting to that level. He's not there yet. He's just 19 years old. But, you know, it's a big country, the United States, and in much smaller countries that also play other sports besides soccer have produced superstars. So you would have thought by now that just with a law of averages, we would have seen someone like that, even just an outlier. But we haven't. And so I think that's something that when you look at when the U.S. national team on the men's side has been successful over the years, it's not because of a superstar like Cristiano Ronaldo. It's because of an identity that they had more in past years than in the last couple of years, of just being very hard to play against, great team spirit, good defending, and just being a team that played like a team. And you see teams here that have a lot of talent that sometimes don't play like a team. I'm thinking of Argentina here. And then you see some teams that play better than the sum of their parts.
Yeah, and listen, at some point in time, you would think that that kind of soccer player is going to be there for the United States. Not there now, but it doesn't mean you look at it. I mean, Grant, I look at number one is the World Cup is an unbelievable event, right? I'm not a huge soccer fan. I'm not going to pretend to be a huge soccer fan. I don't know the game. You know, you've forgotten more about the game than I'll ever probably know. Put that aside, I still appreciate the stage and the event, because I sit there and I watch. I had it on yesterday. I had it on Saturday. While I was doing stuff around the house with my kids and my wife. It is a tremendous world event.
No, it is, and I would also say you don't need some special knowledge to enjoy the sport. And I think a lot of us who follow the sport and love it, we welcome new folks to watch the World Cup and embrace soccer and want to learn more, because in many ways, it's the simplest game, right? You've just got a ball and two goals, and there's not a lot of extra equipment or stuff necessary to play it and to enjoy it. So there's different ways to play the game, obviously, and a World Cup's a great situation because you have teams from all over the world and all of the styles that come with that going up against each other on the field. And big stars, too, that we've gotten to know in recent years, whether it's through the World Cup or Champions League or the English Premier League.
How has Russia been as a host country so far?
They've been great so far, actually. You know, I've just been in Moscow the whole time on the Fox Sports studio, but every Russian I've met has been very friendly. There's a really good fan spirit in the streets here. Sometimes I have to put earplugs in at night because fans of different teams are chanting outside my hotel. But I'm totally cool with that. It's a great atmosphere where you've got people from all over the world.
All right, what about the victory yesterday by Mexico over Germany? What does that tell you? Does that tell you more about Mexico, or does that tell you more about Germany?
Well, a little bit of both. I thought Mexico played a terrific game, and the game plan that Coach Juan Carlos Osorio had was worked to perfection. They were going to counter against Germany, and they did so very quickly, and not always with the best finishing of the many opportunities they have, but they did finish one of them, and that was all they needed through Chucky Lozano. I was disappointed by the German performance. This is the World Cup defending champions, and I thought they were kind of old and kind of slow.
Yeah.
And so I was surprised.
But they came in, I mean, Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, the one thing I was reading up on a lot of the nations before the World Cup started, the one thing I read time and time again about Germany was their unbelievable depth to the team, correct?
Yeah, I mean, they could have picked, you would think, like two or three different teams that could have competed very well at this tournament.
So it's an unbelievable deep team. Did you think going into it, Grant, do you think they were the deserved favorite along with Brazil to win this World Cup?
Well, you know, I think the obvious pick coming into this tournament was to pick Germany again. They came here for the Confederations Cup, sort of a World Cup dress rehearsal last summer with a B team and won the tournament and beat Mexico with its best team. So things are happening inside this German camp that cause you to ask some questions. But the big thing for me is there's a player named Leroy Sané, a young emerging superstar who had a great season with Manchester City. And he was cut from the Germany team right before the tournament, which stunned all of us in the soccer community. But a young, fast, very skillful player who that Germany really could have used yesterday. And I think their coach, Yogi Löw, is going to get some criticism now in the German media and elsewhere for sort of sticking with his guys, some of whom might be a little slow and a little old.
Grant Wall of SI and the author of Masters of Modern Soccer with us here on Taz and the Moose and CBS Sports Radio. Grant, Mark asked you at the very beginning, you know, how do you handle this World Cup if you're a USA soccer fan? Should we root for Mexico like Landon Donovan? Is that a good game plan?
I'm not going to get into the business of telling people who they want to root for, especially when Mexico is the arch rival of the United States. I will say this, though. There are a lot of people out there, including Mexican-Americans, for whom one team, whether it's Mexico or the U.S., may be their team, and they do have a second team. So that kind of phenomenon does exist, that when those two teams play each other, then the first team becomes the team they choose to root for. One great thing about the United States is it's, you know, so many people from so many other countries have come to live in the United States. And so in soccer terms, all 32 teams in this World Cup have fan bases in the United States. I think that's a good thing. But what we're seeing here, I think, are a lot of circumstances coming together with the U.S. failing to qualify, with Mexico doing so well. But, yeah, I think you can get yourself into a can of worms if you try telling people which sports team they should root for.
You know, Grant, on a side note, did it end well with Donovan and USA Soccer or no?
I think between Donovan and U.S. Soccer, the federation, it ended okay. But between Donovan and Jurgen Klinsmann, who is the coach.
That ended poorly, correct?
World Cup. That ended poorly because Klinsmann cut Donovan very surprisingly from that 2014 World Cup team. So there's a lot of resentment between those two guys still. And I know Donovan, like all soccer players, you measure your career in many ways by World Cups, and he had done well in previous World Cups for the U.S., and expected to play in 2014. So that was still a head-scratcher of a decision for me.
All right, Grant, let's Brazil. They have they finished in a draw yesterday with Switzerland. Brazil, who had played well, right, changed their manager, played well, I think, 13 previous matches going into the World Cup. What did you see from Brazil yesterday? You mentioned about Germany, being a little concerned about Germany here moving forward, coming off their 1-0 loss to Mexico. What about what you saw from the Brazilians yesterday, one of the betting favorites coming into this World Cup?
Yeah, it was a little disappointing yesterday from Brazil. They got off to a pretty good start. Felipe Coutinho had a terrific goal from distance, and at that point you're like, well, Brazil's going to win this in a cakewalk. But then Switzerland really tightened things up, sometimes a little overly physically, I think, with Neymar, and I think the referee should have controlled this game a little bit more. But Switzerland came back, got the equalizer off a corner kick. Set pieces have been very important in this tournament in scoring decisive goals. And the Swiss held on, and I didn't see exactly what I was expecting from the Brazilians in the second half. I thought they would find a way to win this game, and they didn't. And here's a situation where the favorites heading into this tournament, whether it's Germany or France or Brazil or Spain, have all underwhelmed to this point. Only France has won of those four favorites, and France didn't look very good doing it.
Is there a build-up, though, Grant? For those that don't watch a lot of soccer, from your perspective, is it a case of you want to come out firing on all cylinders early on, or is there also a little bit of a build-up to where you're peaking at the right time of this tournament?
Well, you definitely want to peak at the right time. This is a really long tournament, guys. It's a month long, and what you do in your first game is important, but it's certainly not the be-all, end-all. And so if you're Germany, you have to treat every game now as a knockout game. You've got to win them. If you're Mexico, I think the challenge now is to appreciate what you did by beating Germany, the defending World Cup champion, yesterday, but also realize you're not even out of the group yet, and you have two games left here, and you've got to get out of the group, and there's a big incentive for Mexico to win the group to set up a better opponent once the knockout rounds begin in the round of 16.
As we mentioned a few moments ago, Grant is also the author of Masters of Modern Soccer, a new book. And you know, Grant, is the sport going through kind of a renaissance in terms of the way it prepares and thinks about playing, managing, coaching, the way kind of our main sports here are going through, whether it's baseball or football, and you've got sabermetrics and whatnot?
Yeah, it is. I mean, data analytics are gaining a lot of popularity in the soccer world, in areas where it's being embraced. You also have, and the reason why I have Masters of Modern Soccer, and I talk about modern soccer in the 21st century game, is the game is changing all the time. It's not the same sport that it was 30 years ago. If you watch games from the 1970 World Cup, they look different than games that you see today. There's a lot more athleticism. There's a lot more demands put on players to be able to do not just stereotypical things. Like if you're a goalkeeper, your job isn't just about shot stopping. You need to be able to start the offense and distribute and do all sorts of those things. And so this book looks at the sport, the craft of soccer, position by position. I pick one person to represent five players from goalkeeper on up to forward, one person who's really good at what they do, but also really intelligent at explaining how they do it. I've got a coach I've got a director of football, a Moneyball type guy. And I think I learned a lot over the last couple of years doing these interviews. And there's, you know, some star players in there like Christian Pulisic, like Chicharito Hernandez. And it was a really good experience.
We're talking to Grant Wall. He's doing a tremendous job for Fox Sports Illustrated. New book, Masters of Modern Soccer, as he just went through. You can hop online, you can get anywhere and check it out. Knows the game backwards and forwards. Grant, when he came into it, we're still early on. You mentioned it's a long tournament. How many nations did you think had an opportunity to win the World Cup?
You know, it's interesting because I would say coming in, those four teams that we mentioned earlier were the clear favorites. I do think there are some teams that are kind of dark horse teams in the sense of the dark horses to win the whole thing. I think Uruguay, for example, is good enough to win the whole thing. I think Belgium is good enough to win the whole thing. And these are teams in addition to Germany, France, Spain, Brazil. There's not too many other ones. You know, I think England fans, their first game is today, would love to think that their team, given the right circumstances, could win the World Cup. But there's not many teams that have won the Men's World Cup. This tournament's taken place 20 times. Only eight nations have won it. And three nations, Brazil, Italy, and Germany, have won 13 of the 20 World Cups. So there hasn't been a lot of variety over the years. It's really hard to win this tournament.
Yeah, a buddy of mine was talking to me about Belgium, who follows the game, loves the World Cup, and he was saying, watch Belgium. They're young, they're athletic, they're really, really good. A team that's kind of, that he believes, if everything comes together, has an opportunity in this World Cup. Talk a little bit about Belgium. Their first match is later on this morning, I think, 11 a.m. Eastern time this morning. Talk a little bit about Belgium.
Yeah, and this Belgium is probably one of the three or four most talented teams in the World Cup on paper. Lots of stars from the English Premier League who we see every week. Guys like Eden Hazard, Kevin De Bruyne, Romelu Lukaku, Vincent Kompany, Thibaut Courtois. And these are guys who are just really talented players. I think they're going to slam Panama today. Poor Panama is in for a rough one, I think, and we're going to see a lot of goals. But Belgium's terrifically fun to watch. I think the question mark with Belgium over the last couple of major tournaments is they haven't been better than the sum of their parts. They don't tend to function as well as you think they should as a team. And so they brought in a new coach, Roberto Martinez, who actually has a chapter in my book. And his whole goal, he has a good record as a knockout tournament coach. He's had a lot of success in the FA Cup when he was coaching in England over the years. And he talked at length with me in the book about the challenge of trying to get all of this talent to start playing together. Because, you know, not every team can do that. Germany's been very good at being better than some of their parts over the years. Argentina and Belgium have not.
How about England, Grant? Surprises me. English Premier League, I know they're not all made up of English players. I get it. But you've had, you know, Rooney, Beckham. There's been some big-time English stars over the years. Why has England not been as good on the World Cup stage as many would like to think they should be?
It's a great question. You know, I think various theories include that the English Premier League is so debilitating and so all-consuming that players don't have much energy left at the end of the season, though lots of teams lots of players who play in the Premier League have won the World Cup with other nations. The English media sometimes gets blamed for putting so much pressure on the players. I think this tournament is different in a sense. This English team is younger. I happen to like this English or England team better than previous ones. Not as much maybe experience in terms of, you know, games, big games played with the national team, but guys like Harry Kane and Dele Alli, they're exciting. And I think they do have a chance to, rarely for an England team, sort of exceed expectations here. They've got a relatively easy group, so I don't think they're going to have a ton of challenge in the group, but maybe that's a good thing because it won't ratchet up the media pressure too much in England.
And Grant, we'll close it out here. Back to USA Soccer here momentarily. Are they going to use this as a wake-up call, not making this World Cup? Do you think this is going to be something we're going to look back on in 20, 30 years maybe, if we're all still walking God's green earth at that point in time, and say this was a turning point for USA Soccer?
I think there's a chance that could happen. I don't know exactly at this point how much U.S. soccer is going to change things. In many ways, there's a reason for excitement when you look at the teenagers who are playing lately for the U.S. men's national team, games that obviously don't have much importance in and of themselves, but guys like Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, Josh Sargent, Timothy Weah. The problem for the U.S. isn't their teenagers right now. The problem for the U.S. in not making this World Cup was the players aged 23 to 27. That generation just wasn't any good. And that really came home to roost in not qualifying for this World Cup, but that same generation didn't qualify for the previous two Olympics. So in a sense, I feel like the punishment that U.S. soccer got for missing this World Cup was the result of mistakes that happened 5 to 8 years ago in terms of talent development, and things have actually started to improve a bit.
Grant Wall, Sports Illustrated, Fox. Check out his new book, Masters of Modern Soccer. Hey, Grant, we appreciate the time. Thanks for spending a couple minutes with us this morning, and enjoy the rest of the World Cup, all right?
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Grant.
And Grant does a fantastic job. And interesting. We'll see. It's different, Bogus, without the United States team there. However, it's still something that you respect. You don't have to be the biggest soccer fan in the world to understand the magnitude of the event of the World Cup.
Well, see, this has been an interesting debate for me this whole time, because I'm probably like in second grade when it comes to understanding soccer. I like it a lot. I'm like, I'll watch a Saturday morning EPL game. I'll watch something in the afternoon during the week. I mean, anything that's in Europe time-wise usually sets up in a good viewing time for me. So it ends up being on my TV a lot. So without the U.S., what I lose is like the one real appointment game, or the three for the group stage. But I'm gonna watch the other games as much as I would have anyway. Like, I'm gonna go home and England and Tunisia will be on my TV this afternoon, just like Spain and Portugal was Friday afternoon. Had I been home yesterday, I would have watched Mexico and Germany. And I think that's true for most fans, because it's kind of like football, where you might be a Giant fan or a Cowboy fan or a Redskin fan or a Seahawk fan, but when your team isn't playing, you're watching the other games at 1 o'clock or at 4 o'clock or Sunday night or Monday night. And like, soccer fans are just going to watch the games no matter what. We miss the people who are going to come in just for the USA games, which is where you really get hurt. But otherwise, if you already like soccer, you're watching the World Cup whether the U.S. is there or not.
Yeah, agreed. We'll get into Kawhi Leonard, the drama down in San Antonio. We're going to do that next, as another NBA superstar wants a new home. It is Tass and the Moose, AB in the house, rolling right up until 9 a.m. Eastern time, 6 Pacific, as we roll right along with you, CBS Sports Radio.
This is U.S. men's soccer legend Landon Donovan, and you're listening to CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
It's 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. We'll get to Kawhi, the drama down in San Antonio, here momentarily. AB's got another update. What's going on, AB?
Moose, 16 under par, the winning score last June at Erin Hills in Wisconsin for Brooks Koepka. It was one over at Shinnecock this weekend. No matter how he got them, Koepka appreciates two U.S. Open titles.
This one's a lot sweeter to go back-to-back. I mean, that's... I really can't even put it into words. You know, when you look back at history, it's incredible.
Curtis Strange in 88 and 89, the last to win back-to-back U.S. Opens. Koepka shot a 2-under 68 yesterday to stay one shot clear of Tommy Fleetwood and his final round 63. Koepka will be a career-high fourth in the new World Golf Rankings. Sweden and South Korea have the honors in Russia. They start the new World Cup day at the top of the hour. Then Belgium, Panama. England and Tunisia kick off at 2 Eastern. As for Sweden, South Korea, now apparently when South Korea was training in Austria, a Swedish assistant coach tried to sneak into one of their practices. He got turned away. In response, South Korea has had its players switch jerseys for practices, so it's harder to ID them. A little soccer-style spy game.
There you go.
I wouldn't think Sweden would need to go to such depths to deal with South Korea, but what do I know?
During practice, they changed their uniforms in order to prevent them from scouting them properly.
So they were in Austria.
There you go.
Yeah, they were in Austria for pre-tournament training, and a Swedish coach just said he was like, oh, I'm in the area. I would love to see a soccer practice. Like, was pretending to be a tourist to try and get into the building where they were working out. Somebody sniffed it out and denied him, but they were spooked. So now everybody's wearing somebody else's jersey. So if, and I guess because most of the team plays in Asia, that the visually Sweden is not familiar with them. So from a distance, you might not know that you're wearing number 7, but you're really number 9.
That makes sense.
I guess.
Good job.
We'll see what happens on the field, on the pitch.
Right.
Shortly.
Well said.
The Chicago Cubs went for the sweep last night in St. Louis and didn't get it. Shut out by Jack Flaherty and 4 Cardinal relievers, 5-0. The St. Louis offense included a Matt Carpenter solo homer. In the afternoon, the Giants avoided a 3-game sweep at Dodger Stadium 4-1, and the Phillies held off the Brewers 10-9. The Astros rallied for a 7-4 win in Kansas City. That's a 10-0 road trip and an 11-game winning streak overall for Houston. The Red Sox hit 3 homers for a 9-3 win and a 4-game split in Seattle. The Jays used back-to-back long balls in the 8th to beat the Nats 8-6 for a 3-game sweep. And Cleveland won in Minnesota 4-1. The win went to Shane Bieber.
Is it too late now to say sorry? Because I'm missing more than just your body.
Oh. Good song.
It's Monday. I got nothing
it
else.
It is. I mean, there's not a lot going on.
In his second career start, this Bieber, K-10 over 5 2/3. He took Carlos Carrasco's roster spot, the veteran righty on the DL with a bruised elbow after getting hit by a line drive Saturday. And Giants wideout Odell Beckham Jr. said over the weekend as he was leaving the field from his youth camp, so take this with a grain of salt, that he will be at Giants training camp next month. Beckham still looking for a new contract.
So why would I take that with a grain of salt, though?
Well, when he's apparently Ralph Vacchiano, who covers the Giants here in New York, yelled at him, will you be at training camp? And he said, yep, yes, I will, sir. I don't know if that's a full-on 100% set-in-stone
guarantee.
Well,
he could not have answered it.
That is true.
Said who? What?
Right.
What are we doing here?
Sorry.
I love Ralph. I mean, Ralph does a great job. But,
he does.
He could have just avoided it. He said he'll be there.
He said he'll be there, but we'll see when
he's actually there. Gonna go.
It's not late July yet.
You don't think he'll be there? I do. I think he's playing nice with Gettleman. I think he's trying to play nice with the Giants. I think he's trying to get the contract. I think he's reading the green properly. I think if he plays hardball with the Giants, I think he has the understanding that it's going to be more difficult for him to get the contract he's looking for. No?
Yeah, no, I do think he will be there. I'm not going to put 100% confidence in him running off a field at a youth camp in Jersey over the weekend as his declaration of his attendance. But he has put everything correctly, and they seem, for whatever reason, to not be growing apart here. But it is also the middle of June.
It is the middle of June. Training camp is, what, 6 weeks away?
Basically, yeah.
Right? So 6 weeks away from training camp. And amazingly enough, then the start of the NFL season will be upon us. But maybe we could take him at his word, and maybe we could believe Odell Beckham Jr. Why do people always expect... I would say this. How come Beckham never gets the benefit of the doubt?
Why
is it a case of, it's not just this instance. I get the scenario where he's running off the field, a reporter yells at him. But why do you think, Andrew, when you look at Beckham, everyone makes a mountain out of a molehill?
Yes.
Everything is the worst, right?
Agreed.
He's a bad teammate, which is not true, right? They paint him in a light in which you would think he was in trouble with the law, like on 5 and 6 occasions. Never been arrested. Never been in trouble with the law. Yes, I get the drama that comes along with it. I understand that he hops on social media and releases videos or will make a statement here or there. But that's the millennial. That's the modern day athlete. Everybody does it, right? But it seems like when he does it, that seems to draw the ire and the anger of sports fans and people who are NFL fans across this country. I don't understand it.
Yeah, and I'm not necessarily, my hesitance to believe this wholeheartedly is not because it's Beckham saying it, just because the setting is at that it was said at, and things can change in the next 5 to 6 weeks. That's all. I'm not disbelieving Odell Beckham Jr. specifically. Had Le'Veon Bell said it, I'd say the same thing. Like, it's him running off the field at his youth camp. So take it as you will. That's all. It wasn't a Beckham-specific critique. It was more just the setting at which it came.
All right.
Is not necessarily, you know, there's no guarantees. He said it, but it's not the end of July yet, and he still may change his mind. They still may take a different tact to negotiations.
I get it. Okay, but to the point that I made, why do you think people always assume the negative with Beckham?
Well, I think sometimes we just pick and choose our favorites, and some guys get away with nothing, and some guys get away with everything.
He gets away with nothing.
And he gets away with nothing. Now, and I think part of
any
that is...
Any misstep is the worst step in the world.
Right, and I think part of that, you know, he's to blame for it. I think whether he's done nothing legitimately wrong as far as, like, the law comes, but, I mean, like, he's had a couple of punk moves on the field, and I think you can make yourself not have fans for things like that, and then, you know, it becomes the... We get in this place where he just has a negative vibe from outsiders. And it's just the way it's going back to Phil Mickelson. Phil Mickelson has done things that some golfers would have never, ever been able to escape. But because he's Phil, he's escaped them. And he'll escape what happened on Saturday. It's just, and I don't know how you earn that or don't earn it for yourself, but some guys have earned it and some guys haven't.
Well, maybe you're likable. I mean, maybe that's the case. I mean, I'll put the gambling stuff in the realm with Mickelson, right? I don't, but maybe it's a case of him. And I get the people that are on the PGA Tour say there are two sides to Phil Mickelson, to play the point that you're making, that you made earlier, Andrew, that, you know, everything you see is not everything that makes up Phil Mickelson, that there is another side to him. I put the gambling aside. I look at the misstep on Saturday and I say, yeah, that was not a good look for Mickelson, but I also don't think we can make it the end of the world either. I mean, but Mickelson will get away with it. You're right. I mean, he'll live to fight another day. He'll take a little bit of heat and he'll move on. And he's 48 years of age now. He's not 26, 27. He's not in the prime of his career. He may never win a U.S. Open after having finished second on six different occasions over the course of his career. But you're right. Mickelson gets away with a lot over the course of his career. Beckham gets away with nothing. And it seems like everybody can't wait. Those that want to knock Beckham can't wait for even the littlest of a misstep, and all of a sudden, it's the end of the world.
Right, and he can do no right, and everything is the worst. And I don't know how you fix it either, which is the bad part. Some guys, you get in it for whatever reason, and you can't escape it. You can shake hands, sign autographs, be a perfect saint for years. And then you make one little boo-boo, and here we go again. I don't know how you get out of it either.
855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Coming up straight ahead, we'll get to Kawhi Leonard, the San Antonio Spurs. Another star wants a new zip code to play in 2018. We'll get into that next.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Rolling right along here on this Monday morning. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on car insurance. And drama down in San Antonio as Kawhi Leonard no longer wants to be a San Antonio Spur. And reports are, you know, the Celtics, the Los Angeles Lakers. There was a report out in New York by Steph Bondi, the Daily News, that Kawhi's people, representatives, would like to see him as a member of the New York Knicks. I don't know. There's a lot of ways to go about doing it. I guess my first, I would like to know where it all went wrong down in San Antonio. I'd like to know, and I get the way that an injury is handled, and AB, we were talking about it throughout the course of the year, all the drama, you know, the comments by Manu Ginobili, the comments by Greg Popovich down in San Antonio. How did it get this bad this quick? Because it was not that long ago where Kawhi Leonard was Spurs basketball, where he was looked like he was going to be able to take the mantle of
right, he'd be the next Duncan, exactly,
right, and be the face of San Antonio Spurs basketball for the next 10 or 12 years. I mean, he's arguably a top five player in the sport. two-way player offensively and defensively when he's 100% healthy. I'd like to know how it got this bad and how quickly it got this bad.
Especially if you're thinking about trading for him. I mean, like, the injury concern is real, too. I mean, a year-long quad issue, is he healthy? Is it better? Is it chronic? Is it fixed? But then you just get to, how did this guy not survive in San Antonio? How did the Spurs not figure this out? Now, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge was unhappy a year ago, and Greg Popovich realized his error in handling LaMarcus, and they straightened things out, and Aldridge had a great season this year. For them not to figure out how to get back on the same page with Kawhi, and, you know, the veiled anger that we heard throughout the year from Pop and then from a handful of players with Leonard not being around, I need to know what kind of guy this is, because all of a sudden now, if I'm putting him into my locker room and something pops up here, like, what am I dealing with? And this is a guy that, like you said, was untouchable.
Untouchable
a year ago, and unquestionable either in terms of what he was on the court and we thought off the court. I mean, we knew he was quiet and not this, you know, overtly personal guy. He wasn't going to be out there, you know, selling me soda and sneakers and stuff like that. He was going to very businesslike and being one of the best players in the NBA. And now there are so many questions. I mean, I'd still basically take him in a heartbeat, but I need a little more assurance along the way here of what actually is going on before I pay a lot.
Well, right,
to go
and,
get him.
And you didn't expect it from a guy who the storyline and kind of came part and parcel with the story of Kawhi Leonard was that he was kind of the unassuming superstar, right? He drove an old pickup truck or an old SUV. He didn't spend a lot of money. He rented an apartment in San Diego, right, during the course of the offseason. It was a gym rat. Popovich talked about how much he just loved playing basketball and he continued to work on his game. And you saw him. He was a great defensive player when he was at San Diego State, collegiately. Not a great offensive player. He's gotten significantly better as an offensive player in the NBA. And that's due to his hard work and determination. So he was kind of the unassuming guy. But when you watched him play on the court, he was an unbelievable defender. Great offensive player, could hit the outside shot, great teammate, didn't seem to say boo peep. And now, 2 weeks ago, the reports out of San Antonio was that they were working on a new long-term contract with the Spurs. And then a week and a half to 2 weeks later, no, the report is, I don't want that contract, I just want out.
Yeah, and not to give too much credit and you know, oversell Popovich and R.C. Buford in the Spurs way, but like, you shouldn't want out of San Antonio.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If you want out of San Antonio, like, that's more on you than it is on them, unless we're completely wrong about the machine that they've created down there. But again, they've won all these titles and all of these games, so I think I'm right in thinking that it's a mark on you if you don't want to be down there. I just, what could they have done?
I don't know. That's a great question.
To want to be a Laker.
I don't know. I don't know what they could have done to Kawhi Leonard. Maybe it's a case where he doesn't feel like he is getting the credit that he deserves. Maybe it's a case that he wants a bigger market. Maybe it's a case that his people feels like you're never going to get out of the shadow of Tim Duncan down in San Antonio. You need to go someplace else. Now, you go to Los Angeles, it's all about Magic, and then it's about Kobe, and it's about Shaq and Kareem and the legendary Lakers of years gone by. But maybe he wants a bigger challenge and a bigger market. I don't know that answer, AB. That's confounding to me. When I look at the player, I love the player. How could you not love what he gives and provides for your team? If he should be a part of your team. Now, you question it. Sometimes relationships go wrong and they go wrong for a strange reason. I would love to know what the backstory is. It can't just be about how San Antonio, the Spurs, were handling his injury. There's gotta be something more to that and what's going on down in San Antonio, because you're right. If you really want to win and you want to be with a stable franchise, why would you ever leave Buford and Popovich in San Antonio?
Yeah, and I feel like if Spurs doctors were inept and he really felt that strongly that he had been mismanaged or misdiagnosed or they were being in any way treated unfairly here, I feel like by now we would have been pointed in the direction of other guys who had, and obviously not to the same level as players, Leonard, but other guys, secondary players, bench players, whatever it may be, that had issues in San Antonio. Like, oh, this guy had an ankle injury that never went away. Or he, I also didn't like the Spurs. Like, we would have had other information here.
That's fair.
Like, leaked out by the Leonard people.
That's fair.
To show us that the Spurs, and have we? I mean, I don't, we haven't. Right?
I mean, there was one point in time Tony Parker was having issues with Popovich, but it wasn't about an injury. It was about more personality. Remember, who was the actress that he was dating, or he was married to at the time? She was on, remember that ABC show?
Eva Longoria.
Yeah, right. Eva Longoria, right. So, I think he was married to her at the time, and there were reports they wanted out of San Antonio, but that ended up getting rectified, right? So he ends up, he's never played for another organization. But other than that, no. I mean, think about this. I mean, look at Manu Ginobili. Ginobili's basically on a situation where Popovich calls him and says, we need you to play. He goes there and plays.
And Parker was the guy, you know, kind of speaking out and somewhat critical of Leonard,
right,
in terms of not coming back this year. So, and this just, it looks so bad on Kawhi, and I'm just so confused by how it's gotten to here.
Right.
But now they have to trade him, right? Well, I mean, there's no turning back
right,
from this.
Now you've reached a point where I think they have to trade him. Now it's a matter of maximizing value. And if I am the San Antonio Spurs, I would not trade him to the Los Angeles Lakers. The team, if the Boston Celtics want Kawhi Leonard, that's, if I'm looking to try and get the most back, what I can get back, the Boston Celtics would be the destination for Kawhi Leonard. That I could get, conceivably speaking, draft choices moving forward, and I could probably get two very young, very good players from the Boston Celtics in return.
But if you're the Celtics, are you putting Jaylen Brown in a trade? And again, it's crazy to me.
You're not putting Tatum.
No,
put Brown in that trade, would you not?
And it's crazy to me that I'm talking away from trading for Kawhi Leonard. But if you're the Celtics and Jaylen Brown is coming off the postseason he just had and he's a baby in the NBA, are you trading Jaylen Brown to get Kawhi Leonard, who just has basically an ugly divorce with Greg Popovich? Do you trust him to get along with Brad Stevens?
Well, let me ask you this. Is it worth the roll of the dice? Say next year I win an NBA championship.
Right.
Is that worth it? To me, it is.
Yeah, you know, it is.
And it is worth the roll. That, to me, is worth the risk.
And when you couple it with Kyrie Irving being anything but committed to Boston long-term, apparently, you're mixing in another, you know, kind of transcendent star. You may lose Irving, but now you've got Kawhi still with Jason Tatum and the other young pieces.
And Gordon Hayward.
It makes sense along those lines as well, but I'm spooked by this.
We'll get more into the Leonard stuff coming up after the break. And also, Jason Sobel is going to join us, senior golf writer for Action Network HQ. We'll join Andrew and myself as we roll right along on a busy Monday. It's Taz and the Moose with you, CBS Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.